Pardon me. Pardon me while I take a little spin on the clavichord, will you? I like to accompany my own narration. Oh, surprise, huh? Think this is where you came in? Well, just relax, chum, because this is number 23A of 26 by Corwin. Not 24, not 23, but the Columbia Workshop Blue Plate Special, 23A. And it doesn't count as one of the 26. That's why I said it doesn't count, period. Is your old pal Nick, the Greek god of trivia, bringing you on behalf of the workshop a repeat performance of Descent of the Gods, a speculative fantasy written by Norman Corwin and having to do with some familiar gods in unfamiliar circumstances. And the reason why we're doing Descent of the Gods instead of what was scheduled is because Norman Corwin is out sick, or ill, as we classicists say, and this is just thrown in to keep the series all in the family. Pinch-hitting for Mr. Corwin in the control room is Perry Lafferty, and that's enough explanation for you listeners, comma. So let's just get on with me and McClavichord. Now, unless you've ever been a god yourself, you have no way of knowing how dull immortality can get to be sometimes. Take my word for it, friend. I'm a little-known god of long standing. Little-known because I happen to be the god of trivia, which is just as exciting as being 16th vice president in a gimlet factory. Very boring work. In fact, it's under the heading of trivia that this chronicle comes. You see, all history's trivial to a god because it's always repeating itself like gossip. And I'm taking the time to tell this story about the visits of Venus, Mars, and Apollo because I think you ought to hear a running account, not just the fragmentary accounts that appeared in your press and radio from time to time. Anyway, it was in the fall of 1942 that Venus, that's the original goddess of love and beauty herself, having read of the United States in a book called Bullfinch's Earth, decided to visit the place. How she got there is none of your business. I'm prohibited from telling you any of the details of life among the gods due to a ruling of Deletius, the god of censorship. Suffice it to say, her descent was full of good old rowdy-dowl, razzle-dazzle, and fireworks, Roman candles. But the first thing most of you knew about it was when a network radio program was interrupted to bring you the news. We interrupt the program of the Four Horsemen to bring you the following bulletin.
Boston, Mass. Police and civic authorities are puzzled over the appearance early tonight of a beautiful woman who claims she is the goddess Venus. Astonished spectators reported she descended on a brilliant shaft of light on Boylston Street in the heart of the city shortly after 8. At first, she was mistaken for some movie exploitation in connection with the opening of a new picture. Asked what she was doing in Boston, she said she had read a reference to that city as the hub of the universe and wanted to see what the hub of the universe looked like. An investigating committee of legal experts and police have referred the case to the immigration authorities. A public hearing will be held tomorrow. For further details, read your newspaper.
We now return you to the program of the Four Horsemen.
Well, the dispatch was right. Venus was quizzed by a court of experts. If you can think of anything more undignified for a goddess than to be quizzed by a court of experts, just mail a suggestion to me in care of trivia and I'll tear it up. Story by the press and by radio with a proper degree of sensationalism. However, it was the hearing before the special committee at Boston that first brought Venus into sharp encounter with some of your finest minds.
All right, that'll be enough picture-taking for the present. Will the press photographers kindly clear up?
All right, fellas, get your boxes. Oh, we've been
waiting. Clear the court, please. We will now proceed with the inquiry. Gentlemen of the board, will you begin your questioning?
Miss Venus, unaccustomed as we are to public appearances of deities, we feel that we cannot simply accept your word of goddesship, but must ask you for credentials. Have you any?
Deo homines melius tractant quam homines deus. Nunquam rogavimus ut aliqui ex illustribus patribus vestres, aut signo, aut documento mortalitatem probaurent.
Did you get what she's talking about, sir? No, but I think she's talking French.
I think we better get Professor Huntington. Professor Huntington, would you kindly translate the testimony of the witness for the benefit of those in the committee who have gotten a little rusty in their knowledge of French?
The witness said, in Latin, the gods are more hospitable to mortals than mortals to the gods. Never have we asked any of your illustrious ancestors to prove by signs or symbols their mortality, unquote.
Yeah. Now, madam, you have been heard to speak English prior to this investigation. Why did you choose to reply to my colleague, Mr. O'Shaughnessy, in Latin?
Because Latin is one of my credentials.
I see. Have you any others?
Apparently, by credentials, you mean something of sufficient supernatural force to convince you that I am other than a human being. In an earlier day, such impudence was answered by the visitation of catastrophe. Floods and holocausts and famine were hurled upon the heads of mortals in exaction of due expiation.
Will you answer Mr. Saltonstall's question, please?
Answer yes or no.
If you keep insisting on it, I will give you credentials of the most convincing sort. One appeal to Jupiter Fulgur, and you will be struck right in the middle of your committee by a bolt of lightning.
Miss Venus, this hearing will simply not tolerate any attempt at intimidation. Moreover, another remark of this sort, and we will be obliged to cite you for contempt of the committee.
And what about contempt of the gods?
Now, just a moment, madam. We are merely trying to establish whether, in what even you will admit is a strange situation, we are being hoaxed. If you are indeed a Roman goddess, we have certain restrictions regarding immigration, which must be complied with.
Yes, and if you cannot prove to our satisfaction that you are what you have claimed to be, then we must recommend arraignment on a number of charges, such as flying without license in violation of federal aeronautical regulations.
Exactly.
Flying low over a thickly populated area in violation of municipal ordinances.
Absolutely.
Attempting to deceive officers of the law, perjury, contempt of court.
Then I suppose I must convince you. Since it would no doubt constitute contempt of the committee to strike dead any of its honorable members, I will call upon my worthy cousin, Jupiter Fulgur, to destroy by lightning the chandelier directly over the center of the courtroom. As a token credential.
Well, we might as well be practical about this. Will the spectator sitting in the center of the courtroom please clear the area directly under the chandelier? Now then, please proceed, Miss Venus.
Jupiter Fulminator. I, Venus, call upon thee to ascend from the altar of Campus Martius and to strike with your ready wrath the main lighting fixture of courtroom 12A, Suffolk County Courthouse, Boston, Massachusetts. It takes a little time to warm up.
Yes, warm up.
But it'll be along any minute now.
Order in the court. The cameramen will please not take any pictures until recess is called.
Sir. Yes, Your Honor.
Will you please enter the fallen chandelier as Exhibit A?
Yes, sir.
And then call an electrician to repair the lighting system. Seems Jupiter Fulgur blew out all the fuses.
Yes, sir.
The hearing will now continue. Miss Venus, I think we are satisfied with your credentials.
But, Mr. Chairman, since she's a foreign goddess, what assurance have we that she's not a fifth columnist or an agent of foreign propaganda?
No, Fitzpatrick. I think that question is improper in view of existing evidence.
Still, there'd be no harm in having Venus register with the State Department.
That's entirely a matter for the jurisdiction of the federal government and nothing for us to decide in this hearing.
Very well, Mr. Chairman. I withdraw my question.
Now, unless there is dissenting opinion from the committee, I will declare the witness to be an accredited deity of sound mind and with the recommendation that the usual formalities of registration be waived, and that the hospitality of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and of its sister states be extended to her as long as she remains on these shores.
Well,
Well, that took care of Venus's reception. There was some talk about having her investigated by the Dyes Committee. A number of pressure groups wanted to have her deported immediately on the grounds that she might be a potential danger to the youth of the country. But nothing came of this, and in the meantime, she was offered all kinds of new propositions every day.
Miss Venus, would you be available on the coast on the 28th to judge a beauty contest at Bellet's, Venice, California? I tell you, we're selecting the most beautiful hat-check girl in the United States.
West of all of the Federated Women's Clubs of North and South Carolina, we extend you a cordial invitation to speak at the annual convention of the FWCN.
Darling, we put an orchestra behind her. We get a good MC who can sing like Donna Meach, you see? And get Lynn Murray's chorus to give it class. The good comedy team, and I'll guarantee you the biggest Hoppers rating on the air. We can call it Venus Varieties, a Venus Presents, a 26-5 Venus, something like that. Get a soap and perfume sponsor.
That's the reason I'd like to see any other studio beat our terms. Now, look, one picture a year for $100,000. Now, Garbo doesn't get that much, and she's had much more experience in pictures than you. You'll have your own choice of material, director, cameraman...
We'd like to make you an offer to endorse our new spring line of vanity...
Venus, I'm a 41-year-old bachelor, very well off, who's been looking for a wife.
Interested in doing a 10-minute guest spot on We the People?
Would you sign your autograph on the back of this menu and write something under it for my nephew? His name is Oliver W.
The use of your name is one of the patrons of the Committee on the Conservation of Everything by the Use of Nothing Society's annual dinner. And
what are your favorite magazines, soaps, dishes, movie actors, animals, and gods? I'm writing an article
for... I'm a young girl of 28, and I've been going with two men off and on for 6 years. And one of them has pimples, and the other is...
dedicating a new market in downtown Los Angeles. And we were wondering if, mayhap,
but
Venus
accepted none of these propositions. She said she was a goddess, not a celebrity.
No, I'm not interested. Thank you very much.
She traveled incognito and alone and went into high places and humble places, and she looked and she saw, and when she'd seen what she wanted to see, she came back to the East and announced she was going to return to the home of the gods. Well, there were so many requests for interviews before she left, she granted a press conference, and the reporters kept her busy answering questions.
What would you say were the outstanding observations you made during your stay, Venus?
Well, you appreciate that I must, of course, confine my comment to matters affecting love and beauty. Those are the matters over which I have suzerainty, so to speak.
Why are you confined to that subject only?
Oh, Jove only knows.
Well, what do you have to report about American love and beauty?
Only wholesome things. Here in the New World, as in the Old, you mortals love beauty, and you love love. By chance felicity, a few are born with charm and beauty. By random fortune, still another few afford the means of education and the grace of manner. They can buy it. But these are few and rare. The millions of you, yes, the multi-millions of you, each wants to look beautiful and well to others and yourself. The girl at the machine, the elevator boy, the weary typist and the shipping clerk, the busy housewife straightening the house before she goes to town to meet her husband, the schoolgirl primping in the corridor. They all want beauty and good looks. Each last one likes the smell of new clean things to wear. Some of them cannot afford to buy a hairdo or to have their teeth straightened. Others wear their glad rags only once a week. Some never, having none to wear. But always they are hoping things will be better, hoping they will be better. Always they would like to earn a little more, to stay ahead, to put a little by. And as for love, who would not be a part of that? How low must one be before he cannot dream of loving and of being loved? No. My domain will never shrink, old world or newer still. I will be goddess of the greatest, the most intelligent.
Well, Venus talked to them for 20 minutes without stopping. And then she disappeared in a cloud of fine Roman incense. Before she left, she said she'd recommend the country to a couple of other gods, Mars and Apollo, whom she thought might be interested. And they were, apparently. Why, Mars got so hepped up over Venus's account that on the 1st of March, that's the month named after him, exhibitionist, you know, The 1st of March, he arrived on the roof of the War Department at Washington by special arrangement. You Americans by that time were getting accustomed to welcoming ancient gods, and there was a 21-gun salute. There's a fine speech by the Secretary of War and so forth. And Mars, who's never been what you'd call exactly glib, rather bungled it a little. Obviously, he'd been boning up for his visit on an old edition of Bullfinch's Earth, because after the Army and Navy chiefs had welcomed him, he pulled a boner.
Thank you, thank you. It is an honor and a privilege to be received in this cordial manner, and I am looking forward eagerly to meeting your splendid General George Washington, whose exploits I have been studying with great interest. I would also like to extend my felicitations to your naval hero, Admiral John Paul Jones, whose victory over the French and Indians...
Lucky for Mars, everybody took it as a big joke, thinking that that was just his prankish way of giving the military bigwigs a hot foot. There was a lot of parading and receptions at various embassies, and he was engaged to write a military column in PM as a guest of the general. He was interviewed by Major George Fielding Elliott over CBS. There was an article by General Hugh Johnson attacking him for something he said. And he was signed up as technical advisor on a new war film. But he left two fiascos in his wake before he finally went home. The first was in connection with Information Please, on which he was invited to be one of the four experts, along with Kieran, FPA, and Deems Taylor. It seems that Fadiman had done some special questions pertaining to war, but Mars didn't know any of the answers.
Don't tell me. Wait a minute. Let's see. I don't know.
Kieran did, of course. And Mars's face was pretty red. Next thing that happened, he was invited to attend some army maneuvers, and he went along in a staff car with two majors and a colonel. The only trouble was that Mars had never seen a machine gun before, to say nothing of tanks, planes, and flamethrowers. And when the heavy maneuvers started...
What are those fearful instruments, Colonel?
Those are some of our new 20-ton tanks.
Dear, dear, very frightening. That one are those.
By our new six-mortar flying fortresses, the OB-203. Above them is a squadron of our improved dive bombers, the X-122.
Colonel, I'm afraid I don't feel very well.
Now there are some of our new 30-mile guns operating from railroad emplacements.
I think perhaps I'd better...
Why, General, our guest is getting very pale.
What? Oh, I say, aren't you feeling well, Mars?
Oh.
What? Why, Mars has fainted.
Get some water, quickly. Stop the maneuvers. Stop the maneuvers.
Yeah. Mars toppled right over in a dead faint when the artillery opened up. Took a hose of cold water to revive him. And when he recovered from the shock, he decided to go back home and sit in a nice, quiet pantheon until his nerves settled down. However, he managed to hold a press conference before he left.
I must admit man's progress in arms has been astounding. In ancient times, a man's strength, skill, and valor had something to do with his fighting. But today, I observe that the detonating power of various nitrogen compounds, the trajectory of a shell, the thickness of steel plating and the revolutions per minute of a gasoline engine are of greater importance. You make thicker armor to stop bigger shell armor to stop bigger shell armor to stop bigger shells, and then you have to make bigger shells to pierce thicker armor. Truly amazing. Now, I am going to make a confession, gentlemen. The real reason for my collapse during the recent army maneuvers was not, as you so charitably reported, due to something I ate, but was the result of complete shock and panic. Yes, you may well be surprised, but your surprise is hardly comparable to the sensation which I experienced when I realized that the godship of war has, in effect, passed from my hands to that of mankind. Yes, in fact, I am seriously contemplating the possibility of resigning as God of War.
That's Mars for you. Grandstand play every time.
Didn't mean a word of it. Just a gag. Why, he knew he'd done nothing very remarkable during his visit, so he had to make a big splash on the way out. He succeeded all right, because for a whole month after that, Walter Lippmann and Dorothy Thompson were writing opinions on the subject. And just as the excitement over Mars began to subside, Apollo came down for a visit. No flashbulbs, no fanfare about his descent. He just showed up one afternoon at the Greek embassy in Washington, and he went soberly about the business of registering in a civilized way.
I should like to register through the proper channels.
Sure, I got the channels right here. What's your name, Smart?
I am Apollo, better known to the ancestors of your great country as the god of music and culture.
Well, of course, soon as the story got out, he was swamped with telegrams and cablegrams and radiograms and offers.
And we would be deeply honored to have you join a symposium on the subject of present-day tendencies.
The Museum of Modern Art cordially invites you to dedicate an all-Apollo
to toss out the second ball in the world.
Dear Apollo, my little boy is studying music, and I have great difficulty making him...
It might make a striking program if you were to be one of the four guests on People's Platform this week. The subject is Western Culture, Is It Worth Preserving? And other participants will be...
I have seen your pictures in the paper, and I think you're the most handsome man I've ever seen. I would trade you for Clark Gable or Tyrone Power any day. Now, I have a little favor.
Apollo accepted some of those offers because he was interested. No stuffed shirt he. He said he was glad to appear on the People's Platform with a soda jerk and a taxi driver because he thought little men and big men should talk things over oftener. He coined an epigram about little men, which I pasted here in my scrapbook of trivia. Quote, "The little man is a bigger man than a big man whenever he gets together with more little men," end quote. Oh, he stood in fine with everybody, Apollo did. Around commencement time, he was given 7 degrees in 6 days.
Doctor of Law at Harvard.
Thank you.
LLM at Catawba.
Thank you very much.
PhD at South Dakota State College of Agriculture.
I am greatly honored.
Doctor of Fine Arts of Princeton.
I'm very happy to receive this degree.
Doctor of Humanics at Oglethorpe.
A rare privilege.
Master of Music at Juilliard.
A pleasure and an honor.
Delighted, Sweetbriar.
Thank you so much.
He covered a lot of ground, Apollo did. And his modesty and his gentle Greek bearing won him a lot of friends. Of course, musicians and theorists were after him day in and day out because he naturally knew all there was to be known about music. And sometimes he was dragged into some pretty high-flown discussions.
But of course, Apollo, the question is this. Does a hypomixolydian tonality resemble a major key with either an excessive emphasis on the subdominant or a top-heavy and ultimately prevalent dominant?
Pardon me, but that's not the question, Harkness. We must be careful not to impute relationships to keys separated from discursive modulation unless we have strong collateral evidence from the enharmonic key functions of a definite musical pattern. Don't you agree, Apollo?
Well, I,
But the perfect example of my point is the use of the triskydica, hyperendica, and a heptachord.
Gentlemen, the question seems simpler to me than that.
Yes, Apollo.
What do you consider the issue, Apollo?
Is the music any good?
Well, things went along, and Apollo got to be so popular that his admirers urged him to stick around, take out citizenship papers. Some of them even wanted him to run for office. Why, there was a special Apollo issue of Fortune magazine, and a series of articles about him in the Saturday Evening Post, and a pulp magazine feature claiming to tell the true love story of Apollo. But none of this seemed to bother him much. And one day, he just upped and said he was going home. Unlike Venus and Mars, he didn't hold any press conference, but he did give a radio talk just before disappearing into the night mists over Madison Avenue.
I have been asked to make a few farewell remarks concerning my impressions of the state of mortal man. They are these. Man is greater than the gods in many ways, and lower than the ant in many others. He can fly the air and swim under the sea and fling his voice around the world, turn night into day with filaments, grind lenses which draw the moon down until its mountain peaks are barely 20 miles away, take pictures of men's insides from without, send heat and light and horsepower across 400 miles of desert in a copper wire, listen to the sounds of 7 continents by fingering a knob, or clock the yawning heavens with a trigger hair, and tell you 20,000 years ahead what second, of what minute, of what hour, of what day, the years ahead, what second, of what minute, of what hour, of what day, the sun will be eclipsed, and where the fleeting shadow will be seen. Man can make music that will hold a million other men transfixed, can weigh the very earth he stands on, freeze by heating, move a mountain with some sticks, press shapeless gases into solid blocks, teach fleas to dance. Yet, give this wonder man a simple problem, such as how to keep from killing several million other wonder men just like himself each 20 years or so, and he is baffled and distraught. This man, who understands the vast complexity of logarithms and who has a formula for harmony and chemistry, for logic and hydraulics and for stress and strain, just give this man the problem of some surplus livestock on the one hand, and some hungry men who cannot buy that livestock on the other, and he'll fume and fret and make up laws and regulations, and then finally destroy the livestock and leave the hungry men still hungry. This man who knows more than the gods do of the spectrum of a star, who comprehends the structure of a leaf, splits atoms and counts molecules, traps whales and diagrams a bug's anatomy, knows not enough to grasp the simplest truths and bend them to his will. He hails the golden rule as golden, then puts it on a shelf to be forgotten, and he makes new rules of lead. But I shall not despair, for man has in him all the seeds of his own betterment, and one day they shall sprout. When that day comes, the vine shall reach to heaven and the gods climb down. Now I have finished, and I will go back to my Olympus. Goodbye, my hospitable mortals, and good fortune to your seed.
Well, so then he went home. That's all. Simple as that. There haven't been any gods to send since then, so there's no more to the story. I'll keep you posted if anything turns up. That's my job now. Nick, Greek god of trivia, that's me. If there's anything you want to know that's not worth knowing, just drop a card to trivia, care of Nick.
You have been listening to program number 23A of 26 by Corwin, a repeat performance of Descent of the Gods, written by Norman Corwin and directed by Perry Lafferty in the absence due to illness of Mr. Corwin. Nick, the Greek god of trivia, was played by Henry Morgan, better known to radio audiences as Here's Morgan. Venus was played by Eileen Burns, Apollo by House Jameson, and Mars by Winfield Honey. Others in the cast were Winston O'Keefe, Frank Lovejoy, Hester Sondergaard, Henry Jones, Eddie Mayhoff, Lucille Meredith, Norman Ober, Juliana Taberna, and Everett Ripley. The clavichord music was played and arranged by Edith Weissmann. Next week at this same time, the workshop will return with the previously scheduled repeat performance of The Odyssey of Runyon Jones, the listener's choice for the encore program in this series. Tonight's broadcast was, of course, unscheduled and does not count as one of the 26. Program number 25, entitled Psalm for a Dark Year, will be heard on November 2nd, and the series of 26 by Corwin will come to a conclusion on November 9th. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.